I can be going to work, which a lot of folks, especially in our community, why I thought that it wasn't a Black person thing. But then when you think about it, it really is. It is a Black community. Addiction is a Black community, quote unquote, thing. It is something that's very prevalent in our community. However, it just looks very different.
My name is Fauna Asfaw, and after doing the back-breaking work to save and reclaim my own life, my passion now is to help others do the same. Since writing my debut book, Sober Daughter, the amount of people that wanted more inspired me to create this podcast. This space is for both real people and industry professionals to share inspiring experiences and usable tools for us all to connect and heal ourselves together. In today's episode, we're going to be discussing sobriety, specifically Black women in sobriety and representation. So stay tuned to the end for some hot tips to take with you. Today, our guest is Katie Oluwatoyin. She is the founder of Sober Black Girls Club, a fast and growing safe space for Black women in sobriety. In 2018, she decided to put down the bottle, and when she went online for guidance, she didn't see many pro-sober platforms that catered to women that looked like us. So she created the Sober Black Girls Club, which is a coast-to-coast 501c3 collective that runs a mentorship program and four weekly meetings and so much more. I'm so happy to have you here, Katie. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for asking me to join you, Fauna, on your podcast.
I mean, I know about you, and I know that, we've worked together and you've been on this mission, especially since getting your own sobriety and finding spaces that look like, people like us. And that is not easy. It is really not easy. And it's one of the reasons I created my podcast in so many spaces for sobriety, because it's been dominated in such a privileged, exclusive kind of white space. And for you to, show up and do this work, I just love it. And I want to know, first of all, what prompted you to get sober? What was the, feelings like that you were like, I just need something to change?
Disaster, misery. After a year of graduating from law school, I was working in the city. I had a good job. I had, my first finance car. It's up until then, you buy like cars for like $3,000, $5,000 while you're in college, law school, trying to make it work. Finally had my dream car, a nice apartment on the water. I found out I passed the bar, did way better than I expected, but I was still miserable. I was miserable inside, and I just didn't know why or understand why. And to combat the misery, I turned to what I knew best, which was alcohol, partying, working out, food. I just indulged in a lot of the, at that time, I thought tools that at that time satisfied me or made me feel like okay, gave me something to look forward to. It wasn't until 2018, where like I'm going through jobs, I can hardly pay my bills, that I decided to see a therapist. And I remember the first thing she said to me was, "Kate, I think you need to stop drinking. Like, I think you need to stop drinking." And I thought she was out of her mind. What are you talking about? Are you nuts? Like, I don't come from a family that drinks. I started drinking in college. I'm smart. I'm this. I'm that. You're out of your mind. Left, went back out for another year, continued drinking, and things continued to get worse until I could no longer, even though I didn't understand, because at that time in my head, addiction was really a white person's problem, a white person's disease, per se, how I saw it at that time in my head. I couldn't really understand how a person like me could be in addiction, but I had to accept that, one, I can't go a day without drinking at this point. And two, my life has definitely become unmanageable. It has become a disaster, and something needed to change.
That bottom, that feeling that, is just you're so depleted and depressed and just like out of your mind with no solution. And I remember also feeling that space of like, I don't know what this is. My family doesn't have this. Culturally, I don't know this language, but I knew something was wrong. And I hope, a lot of people can relate to you to the feelings that there was unmanageability and there was this, maybe a desire to stop, but you couldn't. And those are all the signs that, you know, somebody might need to take a look.
For sure. If you can, I go a day without drinking, you probably have, we don't have to put labels on it. I personally don't identify myself as an alcoholic or an addict or use a lot of traditional 12-step language to describe myself. I think for a lot of people that might be scary. But what I realize is that I can get to the bottom of my drinking by being honest and authentic to who I am and myself. So yes, I once I was able to do away with, like, I don't need to identify like this and I don't need to move forward in my recovery like this. It was easier for me to accept it. Like, yes, oh, I am in addiction. I'm experiencing an addiction. I have a drinking problem. And that goes to say that I understand why for some folks it can be, what's the word I hear a lot?
I mean, a lot of people have shared that it's just kind of negative, that they don't want to take on this, you know, definition that's going to define them.
No, for the folks who do like to call themselves
that. Oh, who like to call themselves that.
Yeah, it can be affirming.
Affirming, yes.
There's another word I hear a lot in 12-step rooms that they say, but I can't remember right now off my head. So I understand why folks do identify as that, like on the other side of my thoughts and my feelings. And I think it's all valid. I think that we just all need to really find a way to navigate our addiction and our recovery. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's so personal. It's so personal because this is one, you know, disease that is, you have to be the one to say that you have it. Right. You're the only person that can determine whether, you know, you have a problem or not. And so I love that we're starting to open these spaces of, like, how do we get to healing in sobriety? How do you talk about it? There can't just be one size fits all. It don't work that way, you know? And a lot of people have shared they don't like the labels and they don't like, you know, if it feels limiting to them. And so I love that you share that, you know, it doesn't matter. Whatever works for you. As long as we can be honest that there's a problem and that, you know, we need to seek outside of ourselves for some help, that's when, you know, we start to get some freedom there.
I think you hit the nail on the head when you said you have to make the decision, come into acceptance. You have to do, especially in our community. When I say our community, I'm talking about the Black community, where we are known to be functional through trauma, through violence.
Absolutely.
Misery, but we can go all the way back to our ancestors who were enslaved but still had to work, take care of their family, take care of those who enslaved the family. Right. So we know that we have this generational trauma of working through violence, working through trauma. So I can be going to work, which a lot of folks, especially in our community, why I thought that it wasn't a Black person thing, but then when you think about it, it really is. It is a Black community. Addiction is a Black community, quote unquote, thing. It is something that's very prevalent in our community. However, it just looks very different. So for a lot of us, especially the women, can get up, go to work, go to school, and still be, when they get home, guzzling liters, throwing up. You know, and I always say, you have an addiction. I always say, you're functional until you're not functional, right? Me, the way the universe worked, my thing went really fast. I just became unfunctional. Like, I couldn't fake the funk anymore. And I became, at some point, when I mean unfunctional, I mean like unfunctional person in society, like going to work, fulfilling obligations. I lost that side of me in my addiction. But for a lot of women, for a lot of people, especially in our community, folks who do experience substance abuse, addiction, they have said that, like, they were able to go to work. And from high professional and white collar jobs to blue collar jobs, professional jobs, they were able to function. And no one thought about a thing. However, when they got home, it was a different story. And that's where it's like, your recovery is for you. Even that aside, being Black, folks don't think that we experience pain the same, right? So there's so many layers to that. But we know that we can fake the funk, and also we know that we're perceived by many as not necessarily going through hardship or a group of people who actually need tender and love and care. So really, like, yes, it is you, it's me, it's when we get home, being honest with ourselves and being like, okay, if I keep on going like this, which I probably can on the outside, my insides are going to be dying. My insides are going to be harmed. And we can talk about liver, kidney, brain functionality. You're slowly dying, regardless of how outside your outside appearance, your outside environment looks. And that's, it's scary. So, and I know that was a lot, but I say to say, it really is a you. You need community to overcome addiction and substance abuse. I truly believe in that. But the first part of acceptance and acknowledging that you have this problem, this disease, however you want to define it, really starts with you.
Ooh, say it. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love that you talk about the different barriers for us. You know, it's like systemically and culturally, we do not show up the same way, but the disease is the same. The disease is progressive. So no matter if we're able to show up and power through, which is Black women, we always get that misnomer, you know, we got to be strong. We got to show up. We got to have the world on our back. So we don't even notice, right? So it's really about taking the time to just sit with that truth. And that can be really, really hard because culturally, we don't have a lot of spaces that promote being vulnerable and honest and, you know, keeping these secrets out of your soul and spirit. It's a whole lot of, you know, let's just put it under the rug. And it worked for us because we didn't have trust. We didn't have spaces. And now we're getting to some places where we do. So I really love that. And tell me what it was like for you getting sober in these spaces. So, you know, I related to you of when I was getting newly sober. Everywhere I went, I could not find one person that looked like me. I could not find one person that looked like me. And I share so much with my work and my clients is the power of representation changes the damn game. Like if you see someone that looks like you, it's so much easier to identify. It's so much easier to relate. And unfortunately, it takes some digging. It takes some work. And so what was the experience like for you? Because I know you were frustrated and you were like, there's nothing out here.
So when my first attempt at sobriety happened in my hometown in New York. And New York is a very diverse city. New York City is very diverse. However, I lived in one of the less diverse places in New York City. And I remember like the closest 12-step meeting that I could find, I had to take like 2 or 3 buses there. Mm-hmm. And at that time I couldn't afford my car. I'm when I tell you rock bottom. And I remember being at the meetings and just feeling like this was like a part of my sorority. Like, I don't know, feeling like I kept on hearing, I remember we had a speaker, the first time we had a speaker, and I remember just talking about everything that the person had in this moment. In this moment, their recovery was able to provide them. And it just felt like bragging. And it felt like, and I was such at a place where I didn't want to hear any of this. Like, I want to know how do I get better? Like, how am I going to defeat this? Like, what is the solution? I don't want to hear about, you know, your big house and your big car. Because to me, in my head, even before your addiction, you probably have those things, which, you know, mm-hmm. common times, that's what we hear. We hear people who grew up, when they're sharing their stories, grew up, nice houses, nice cars. Somebody, I can't even relate to you because, right. You know, you started on that playing field.
Right.
And this setting is not for that. It's not for me to be comparing what I have to what you have. It's for me to be inspired to get better, to find mentors. And I just felt like in that speaker meeting per se, I remember just feeling just a really bad, like just disingenuous. I remember in the beginning of her talk, of her speech, she said something to the effect of when she was talking about her addiction, she was saying that like she was so down, bad and out, and how life was horrible. I was living in this part of the borough. And I looked at her like, girl, I live in that part of the borough. What is wrong with that part of the borough?
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with that part of the borough besides, you know, we have the North Shore and the South Shore. Mm-hmm. And that shore, the shore that I live in is one where immigrants live in, Black people live in. And the shore that she lives in is just, it's mostly full of Italians. And again, like that, even that comment, like there's nothing wrong with my neighborhood, not high crime. It's one of the safest boroughs in New York. I was just so taken aback. And that was my initial experience of just like, ugh, just feeling icky, feeling like,
uh-huh.
A sorority or, and I know fellowship, but this was not the type of fellowship I wanted.
I had the exact same experience, and I did, we come in as Black women already with this armor and already, not feeling a part of if we're in all white spaces. So navigating, the perceptions that how I'm perceived, all these battles already, it's like adding these layers before we even get to like the root cause, which is why we're here. So being around people that and of all cultures, and that's why I love that people are starting so many different offshoots exactly for their demographic, because it's like, cut the bullshit, cut all the stuff on top, let's get to why we're really here. And so you can hear it. It's whatever works so you can hear it, that we need to heal, and we need to feel safe to heal. And a lot of us don't feel safe in those all white spaces.
And I think when we look at the world today, what's going on around the world, what's going on in our, own neighborhoods, I think it's possible for folks to eventually feel safe in those environments, right? But it's going to take a lot of anti-racism work. It's going to take yourself and your language and your microaggressions. Like, I'm pretty sure that woman in that first speaker in the speaker meeting, the first one that I attended, didn't even like correlate of like, where is this Black girl from? I'm of course live on the North Shore where all the Black people live. That's where I live. And it probably didn't even like reach her, like come across her mind that like that's offensive and racist. That there's absolutely nothing wrong with my neighborhood. And for you to incorporate my neighborhood by name in your story as an indication of how bad your addiction was or how bad you were, out of your mind. Like you're literally like in my head, I'm just like, it doesn't have to be your ideal neighborhood, but like there's nothing wrong with living in that neighborhood. And again, I think that we can get to that space, but it's going to be, again, a lot of anti-racism work, checking the things that we say, understanding that when we commune, when we fellowship, it's more than just about the individual. And it's important that we are mindful. Even in SBGC meetings in the beginning, when we started SBGC, our meetings, when I was still in my addiction, going in and out. I never claimed to be a mental health professional, to be, I know like now this influencer word is out there. We're in the world of influencing. But this was before that. This was like in 2017, 2018. When I just wanted to talk and commune and fellowship with other Black girls and women, like that was just my idea of like, I'm struggling, you're struggling, and someone's idea to get together. And that's how we started. So isn't it to say that I think it is possible for us to one day be in, I mean, it's happening now. Let's be
Let's be
honest.
there.
I don't know to what level of authenticity and genuineness is happening, because I know even a lot of our members say I would could never say this there. And I feel like, yes, like I went to a Tulsa meeting on Sunday. I didn't speak or share, and I went because I went with someone. We went together. It was something that we did. However, I deserve to be able to tell, speak my truth in a meeting like that. We all do. So even though we are present in those types of meetings, it's like, do we feel comfortable to say our truth? Do we feel comfortable? Yeah, and safe. So I think that that's where we really, really need to like migrate and get to. But we have a lot of work to do. And yeah, we have a lot of work to do. I'll leave it there.
We have a lot of work to do. We really, really do. And I can only, imagine, and that's why I love what you do, and I love doing this work too, because there's not that many people that have access to spaces that are, integrative and inclusive and really work on understanding, all the ways that I show up or I oppress or I'm microaggressing and all these things. And yes, in California, I have, there are amazing meetings that are commingled, and we can, put different values into place. But if you're someplace that's really segregated, or really, there's a class divide, it's going to be really, really tough. And so I think it's really important to have these safe spaces to say honestly what the hell is coming up, because trauma is part of addiction. And if we can't talk honestly about those moments that can lead us back to drinking, we're going to have a problem, because we need to be honest at all times. And so I love that you get to be, one of the ones that is spearheading this. And tell me how it's going, because I know you guys are growing and just like taking off. Y'all doing potlucks and meetups and pop-ups. I love it.
Yeah, and I want to say one thing to our last point. It's just like, even in this, so I'm not in New York right now in the moment, but even in the city and state I am in, where majority of women who are, first of all, the majority of people who are incarcerated on like drugs and substance-related charges are women, that's one. And then women of color, Black women, are leading that. So how is it possible that when I'm at a 12-step meeting, I am, in this past meeting that I went to on Saturday, I am one out of three Black people here?
It doesn't make sense. It's so disproportionate to our numbers. You know, it's affecting our community at rapid increasing rates. And our support is non-existent.
Yes.
Non-existent.
So I just wanted to throw that out there to give anyone who's listening like things to think about. Like, Black people are not less susceptible to addiction or recovery. But we got to think about, why are we more likely to be in prison for these substance-related addiction, substance abuse? We're most likely to be criminalized for that. But then also, when we're not even talking about the criminal justice system, we're talking about just even meetings. It's like, why are Black people not in these meetings? And I think it's something to think about. I think just to ponder. But yeah, SBGC is growing. Earlier, before we jumped on this to record, I was telling you that this year has been a year. It's been so trying in more ways than one. And one of the ways I want to share with you, so we get funding. I don't know if you know right now that the Fearless Fund is in litigation. Long story short, a group of white men is suing this operational funding organization that helps like give funding to Black women, saying that it's discriminatory, even though the Supreme Court already ruled on this years ago, but we won't go into that.
I was like, we could go into that, because that's a whole rabbit hole of racism. Okay.
It's just ridiculous. Like, the Supreme Court already ruled years ago that certain classes, some certain demographics that have been historically oppressed and discriminated against, can receive certain funding that's dedicated just for them, you know, to give them that equity in life, right?
Yeah.
So, So because that litigation is going on, it's tying up our funds, litigation does. So I say that to say, this year, like, we've been growing and we've made things work in terms of our leadership team. We have folks in positions of leadership where they're, you know, taking on different aspects of the club. That, yes, we're hosting meetups. We held our second fall retreat in Agua Dulce, California. It was a great time, but a lot of it took a lot of fundraising, like door-to-door fundraising, our pockets. No, we're in a recession, so it's been really difficult. And during this year, you know, two other organizations that we really, really look up to that have to do with like Black mental health, not necessarily recovery, they decided to close. So that was a little bit discouraging as well. Yeah. But we're just trekking and we're pushing. It's been a great, it's been a challenging year, but it's also been a great year. I can say that, you know, we're expanding our meetings. Next year in January, we're going to be adding two more meetings, which is going to be a men's meeting that's going to be hosted by Brandon.
Oh, we got the men in there too. Okay.
Because, oh my gosh, folks have been asking for this meeting for like years. Well, folks used to ask me like, can we create one for men? And I'm like, no. Like, what do I look like? Like, I'm not a mental health. I'm doing this. This is just me trekking along. And that's one of the things that I love about SBGC, is that my sobriety grows with like the people who we started, where we had
meetings.
People who like you meet, hey, you're not acting the same. Did something happen? Yes, relapse. So like, I always have to remind people, like, I'm not no expert. I'm not no expert in this. I am growing and learning just like everyone else. So when people used to ask me that early on, I used to be like, are you okay? Like, no, I can't do that. But I think that we've come along.
One thing you gotta take credit for though, is if you have a day or two more than anybody in sobriety, you have something to share and teach to the next person. So, I mean, sobriety is for real, for real, for real. Each one teach one.
Exactly.
And you're doing that, you know?
Exactly. I always tell people, like, you don't, I think because social media is social media, everyone feels that they have to be an expert. You don't have to be an expert to start your own group of just saying, we're going to meet this Thursday and we're going to talk about this and that. Like, you guys are just people experiencing something as a collective. You know how it feels. You don't need permission from anyone to meet. You know, clearly, especially in those circumstances and environments, you need to have compassion. You need to have understanding. You need to be open to learning. Understand right. that you don't know everything. No one knows everything. But as long as you have compassion, a sense of responsibility, respect, love for community, anyone can do anyone can simply a peer support group. You know what I mean? Like, it's just support. It's not necessarily any. Yeah, folks can learn some tools, but it's not necessarily educational. You don't need a degree to do this. So yeah, we're adding a men's meeting.
All that to say, the men's get a seat at the table too. Okay.
Yes. And then we're adding a community meeting, also going to be ran by Brandon, mm-hmm. where no matter your gender, you're invited to this meeting.
Love it. Love it. We need so much more. And, you know, you are doing such good work, because when we are here and we are doing this alone, it doesn't work. And so the more we can create spaces to connect, to support, to love, all that stuff is, you know, really what I think for me, sobriety is about. You know, sobriety opened me up in every single way possible, from being this really, really small, you know, like closed in, fearful, you know, full of just problems, to this expansive person right. who looks for, like, how can I help another person? How can I connect with another person? How can I share? And that's all sobriety. I think it's so important that more people know that they don't have to do this alone, and that there's so many spaces that we can, you know, connect to, or like you said, create it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, again, we do have, like, we're going to have about six moving into next year. So we have three now. So, excuse me, five support meetings a week. We do have a mentorship program where we're constantly looking for mentors to take on newly sober folks. And mm-hmm. a requirement for them to apply for the mentorship program is that they have 7 days in recovery or sobriety, that they attend at least three meetings a month, and that they have an intention to stay sober, because SPGC is open to a lot of people, different types of people. Some folks who just want to practice harm reduction. We don't have enough people yet to open our mentorship for folks who want to practice harm reduction or some type of moderation. So the mentorship program is strictly for people who want to practice sobriety and stay in sobriety. You know, we're always looking for folks to host meetups in their city. So if you attend meetings, if you're part of the community, we can always reach out and say, hey, I want to host a meetup in this city. You know, we do have our podcast, the Black Girl Scout podcast, which Fauna was a guest. I don't remember which episode off had, but it's the episode of our blogs, newsletters. So we're trying to grow each year, but I think, like, our focus is for 2024 is to really hone in and perfect the operations that we already have going on. So I'm excited.
I'm so excited for you. It's so great to see, you know, sober Black women expanding and expressing and creating. That's my get down. Like, that's yeah. my jam. And I think it's really important to share with other people that getting sober is not easy, but it's not also impossible or difficult. It's just, it takes a very certain set of commitments and tools that you get to learn when you connect with other sober people. And that's through trial and error, that's through learning, that's through walking through the process. And I think that, you know, if people can connect to, you know, more Quit Lit and sober podcasts like mine and yours, you know, we get to hear these tools and know that, you know, it's a forever game. You're going on a whole new path, and it's really, really, really worth it, in my opinion.
But
what tips or what tools would you give to any kind of woman that just identifies with you right now, and especially a Black woman listening out there, if she's getting curious about sobriety?
I'll tell her to follow her curiosity. You know, just the other day, another Black woman said she's thinking about no longer drinking. And this is someone from my social circle, not necessarily recovery realm. And I was like, why? Because I never want, I'm curious too. Why? Like, what are you experiencing? What's going on in your world, you know? Because I don't necessarily associate her with as a problem drinker. I've been out with her before. She, to me, seems like a quote unquote normie, one drink. And I'm just like, girl, that could never be me. And no, at no bar, no restaurant, one drink. But, you know, so what's going on? And her basically sharing with me the things that are going on, the things that I can't see, because I'm clearly not with her 24/7. And also just how she feels, you know, like she just doesn't want to feel this way anymore.
Right.
And you know, okay, I'll share with you when I go to meetings. You know, she knew everyone to a Saturday meeting. She's like, can you invite me to the next one? I said, sure, I'll invite you. Clearly, you know, her telling me that she's not ready to make a complete 180 change in relationship with alcohol, but she wants to do something. And I said, why don't you challenge yourself? See what it feels like to go out and not drink. You know, because that's seemed like the crux of her, where the problem lies is social drinking in certain scenarios, why she's drinking, anxiety. You know, why don't you challenge yourself? If you're going to three different social events, why don't you just not drink at one social event and see what happens?
I love
You
that.
know? So I always tell people, like, yeah, it took me a while to even get 30 days in sobriety. When I mean a while, I mean like 2 years. And that's not to scare anyone. At that time, I didn't have support. I didn't know anyone who at that time who was experiencing an addiction. So that's why I created SBGC, because I just was so tired of feeling like I had to do this alone. So I don't think it has to take anyone a year or two of tries. I think that like everyone has their individual journey, but I just say get curious. Like, get curious. If you normally drink when you go out, why don't you just try this one time not to drink? Why don't you enter a Dry January challenge? Why don't you just go to a meeting? I think that we feel like we need to commit to everything and anything right then and there. And I don't
Right.
think life has to be like that. I don't practice the 12 steps, but I will go to a meeting if I need one. Because I can. Because I can assess. I have the autonomy to be like, Katie, you are overthinking. You're kind of struggling right now. You should probably go to a meeting and just sit and listen to what someone else has to say.
Right.
You know, so my biggest advice is just to get curious about life, about what your life can look like without alcohol, about what your life will look like if you continue to drink, or drink in the manner that you are drinking, and then to just get help, create actionable steps. Maybe start seeing a therapist. Maybe just start attending this meeting. See how you like it. Maybe just, you know, go on Google, meetings in my area, and just pick one. Get curious, and hopefully your curiosity encourages you to take small actionable steps. It doesn't have to be these big, huge steps. You don't have to go on Facebook and be like, hi, my name is Katie and I'm an alcoholic.
No,
I
no, no, no.
don't know how to do
Don't
that.
do that at the beginning. I promise. Don't do that at the beginning. No. Yes.
That's
I
my advice.
love it. I love it. Oh, it's so good. It's so good. Yeah. If any of you are listening, you got to just let yourself get a little curious. And really, there's so much support. And if you can just, reach out, reach out, reach out, and start to see what this sober life is all about. And it's you can take it in chunks, you can take it however you take it, but it's really, really, really a whole vibe. And it's just, it's so, I think, I mean, for me, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me in my life. And I just love that people share about it in their own way and in their own way to connect to it. So thank you so much for being with us, Katie. That was so amazing. I love you. I love the work that you do and the safe spaces you're creating for women and absolutely desperately needed it. So I hope you keep going. I hope it grows and grows and grows. And if you want to plug and let people know specifically, like a handle, how they can get to you.
Yeah, I mean, they can, first and foremost, thanks for having me. This was a great conversation. And I'm always just so excited. I actually did like another show last week with another Black woman. Not
Yeah.
necessarily, the episode was about recovery, but her show is not about recovery. But yes, this is what we need to, these are conversations that we need to be having. Because even in that conversation, she said she found out about some of the Breakfast Club through another radio segment that I did last year, and it didn't even occur to her that like Black girls, Black women would have a relationship with substances worth talking about, worth getting curious about,
Isn't that so?
It didn't, and she's a professor. Like she's a prestigious, amazing Black woman professor. But she said it didn't even like occur to her that like Black girls, women would be struggling with substances. So I'm always happy when another Black folk, especially another Black woman, reaches out and we have this conversation, because we need to let other Black girls, women know that what you're experiencing, you're not crazy.
You're not crazy.
You're not crazy. Alcohol is dangerous. Alcohol is progressive. Alcohol is addictive in nature. Awesome. And if your life is changing in a direction that you don't want it to, and if you already have the awareness to connect it in some way, shape, or form, might not understand it, with your drinking habit, you're on the right track. You know, you're not crazy. There's something there, I promise you. Like Fauna said, get the support, get curious, and then, you know, hopefully the changes you want to manifest in your life will come about. But yeah, folks can find Sober Black Girls Club, our handle, Sober Black Girls Club, Sober Black Girls, on all platforms. So if we can't fit this whole Sober Black Girls Club, then it's Sober Black Girls. But if you just type in Sober Black Girls Club on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, it'll pop up. Again, we have our website, www.soberblackgirlsclub.com. And we can always be reached via email at hello@soberblackgirlsclub.com. And hopefully, you know, if you do reach out, let me know that Fauna sent you.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for joining us today's episode of Sober Daughter Podcast. Check back next week to make sure that you were part of another incredible guest sharing inspiring experiences and usable tools for us all to heal and empower ourselves together. You can connect with us or ask questions for a future episode on Instagram at The Sober Daughter. And you can follow me directly to check on what I'm doing at Fauna Asfa on Instagram. So thank you so much for joining. And remember again, keep doing the good work.